Welcome to a very special edition of my show. In 1990, while starring in The Rothschilds off-Broadway in New York, I had the pleasure of guest hosting the Leon Charney Report on Channel 31, and I had the honor of interviewing a very dear friend, Maestro Zubin Mehta. I found a copy of that interview, and I'm going to show it to you today. So get ready. Here we go. Back to 1990 in New York City.
Hello, yes, this is the Leon Charney Report. And no, I'm not Leon Charney. I'm his long-lost cousin, twice removed, Mike Burstyn, sitting in for Leon this week, who is off somewhere doing something for someone somewhere in the universe. It's very hard to keep track of Leon, as it is to keep track of my special guest on the show today. We're competing a little bit with another very big event, the Super Bowl, but we can't help it. We have a super guest today, and just to keep this man sitting still for the time it takes to do this interview, I think is a minor miracle in itself. But since his long-standing association with Israel, I think miracles have followed him around wherever he's gone, and probably one of them rubbed off on me today because I managed to get him into the studio for half an hour here in New York. He is the musical director for life of the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra. At the same time, he is the musical director of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. He is a regular featured guest with the Vienna Staatsoper, with the Teatro Comunale in Florence, the Royal Opera in Covent Garden, the Salzburg Festival for over 20 years. He has been an annual visitor to the Berlin Philharmonic, the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, the Philadelphia Orchestra.
You're going to take up the half an hour already.
If I were to name everything, we'd be here for half an hour. But the most important thing is that he's a real mensch. Now, for those of you who don't speak Hindu, a mensch is a real person, a very dear friend, and it's Zubin Mehta.
A mensch mit Spielkes.
A mensch mit Spielkes in Toches, sagen wir. Let me clear up one thing to begin with. Du bist Ayid.
Ayid? No.
Bist nicht kein Ayid, no.
Vielleicht ein gewesener Jid.
Amul.
Amul.
Aber der Rest Jiddisch. Wie kommt das?
Wie kommt das? Von du und von dort.
Well, for our viewers who don't understand French, I asked whether Mr. Mehta is Jewish, and obviously he's not. I'm sorry to disappoint the Yiddish imamis. Then the question really is, your long-standing legendary association with the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra and with Israel in general, your love for Israel, so many years. How come? Where did it start? Why?
It started by coincidence, actually. In the days when I wish I would have Spielkes.
Spielkes are pins. Pins and needles, right?
Well, you can't sit still.
You can't sit still.
It's ants in your pants.
Yeah. kosher ants.
Only. Listen, this is getting to be the Jackie Mason show.
Not quite. Not quite. Not quite.
I was sitting in Vienna doing nothing, waiting for somebody to call, ask me to conduct, and I got a call from the Israel Philharmonic saying that Ormandy is sick. Would you please come? So I went there, and that was 1961. And I've been going back ever since. It's as simple as that.
Now, just over 20 years ago, you were appointed musical director for life of the Israel Philharmonic.
20 years ago, I had my career in Israel, too. I mean, my growing. 20 years ago, I was appointed music advisor. Then, about 10 years ago, I was made music director. And four or five years ago, I was made music director for life.
For life?
Yeah. The first two appointments were with my permission, my consent. The last one, I had nothing to say. By that time, I was already...
Whose life, your life or their life? But it's been such a marvelous association. You've taken the orchestra all over the world. You once referred to them to me, if you remember, in an interview we did in Tel Aviv, as your family. Is there something special about the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra that sets them apart from all the major orchestras you've conducted?
Well, first of all, they are the only real cooperative that I know of. That means they are shareholders, in a sense. They really manage themselves. They decide their destiny, with an elected personnel, of course. And being a real cooperative, they also have real problems. They have problems of budget. They have, and of course, the most incredible subscription family also. They have about 36,000 subscribers that bring in about 60 to 70% of their budget. But it's the 40 or 30% of the deficit that's their problem.
Apart from playing notes, and apart from being some of the finest musicians anywhere in the world in an orchestra, they have to worry not only about practicing their fiddles or their horns, but how to raise the money that accounts for the deficit. And this makes them different from any other orchestra in the world.
So
because other cooperatives, like the Vienna Philharmonic or the Berlin Philharmonic, their salaries come from the state. They're only cooperative when they go on tour and when they make recordings. In other words, they're freelancers cooperative. Their mainstay, life's work, is paid by the state. So it's different.
Well, we have a poor state, unfortunately, but when you travel with them, I guess it's the only orchestra that represents Israel. It's like an ambassador.
Almost, yes.
You
no,
can't
there is
say
a
that.
Chamber orchestra, and I believe even the Haifa Orchestra goes on tour sometimes, but as far as the world is concerned, from recordings and you know, the tradition of traveling, which the Israel Philharmonic has done since 1960, you know, they even went on tour with Koussevitzky. I mean, they go back a long time.
Now, you took them on tour to Poland recently, I remember, and there was a very emotional moment when you, if I'm not mistaken, performed in Auschwitz. Did you get to Auschwitz with your
orchestra? We didn't perform, but we visited Auschwitz, and several members of the orchestra, whose parents were lost in Auschwitz, for them it was, you know, a moment that we can only describe. We cannot really understand what these people must have gone through to be on the spot where their parents were massacred. So it was, and for all the orchestra, of course, to be there after the triumph of Warsaw the night before.
The concert in Warsaw.
Yeah, the juxtaposition of the two emotions was something that was quite...
And this, of course, was before the incredible revolution that took place. In
oh,
Poland.
Yes.
And this was
a couple of years
ago.
This was when Solidarity was still banned.
It was banned.
2 years ago, yeah.
Let me throw you a kind of a left curve. Wagner, the controversial issue in Israel, controversial name. First of all, for our viewers who may not know, Wagner hasn't been played. It's been a kind of a taboo. Why is Wagner taboo in Israel?
Well, Wagner, first of all, we might have to know, was one of the great anti-Semites in an anti-Semitic atmosphere, Central Europe. I mean, anti-Semitism in the 19th century in Europe wasn't an exceptional case. But Wagner was, of course, like everything else in his life, was a standard bearer for this cause also. And the papers he wrote against the Jews, from his earliest days to his latest, to his later life, was with such an exaggerated emotion that one cannot really forget that aspect of his whole makeup. That's one thing. Secondly, and of course very important, is that Wagner's music was used by the Nazis to glorify their own initial victories. Wagner's music was played in the concentration camps over these blaring loudspeakers. And music, after all, is emotion. Music is a language, and this language and these memories, people who have survived those camps don't want to listen to. And one has to sympathize with that. They don't want to come to the concert hall where, especially in Israel, they finally have peace for 2.5 hours is in the concert hall. If you know Israel and its life and its paranoias and its tensions and anxieties, the concert hall is where you can finally sit back and maybe transport it in another world. At that moment, you don't want to remember what happened 50 years ago.
All right, now precisely that happened a few years ago. I don't remember exactly what year it was because I wasn't there. You performed a concert with the Israel Philharmonic at the Mann Auditorium, and you decided, I believe it was as an encore,
Yeah.
You came out and played Wagner.
Yeah.
Why?
Now, I don't want to contradict myself, but we certainly don't want to play Wagner as part of the program and oblige our subscribers, especially those who don't want to have these memories played to them again, don't want to oblige them. But there is a whole segment of the population, and certainly the Israel Philharmonic as musicians, who have a lapse in their education, that they don't know the great musical revolutionary of the last century, which is Wagner. There's really a vacuum in their musical buildup. They want to, the public wants to hear Wagner, the musicians want to play Wagner. And so I told the public, I said, look, we perfectly understand your point of view, we sympathize, but there are those of us who want to play it and those of you who want to listen. So we invite whoever wants to stay, should stay, and we will now play Tristan's Prelude and Liebestod.
Do you have any problem with any musicians of the orchestra who refused to play?
Out of 115, only two begged to be excused.
And they left the stage?
Yes. Only two.
What was the audience reaction?
Not one person in the audience left. But one person in the audience stood up and said, you will not play Wagner. Now, we pride ourselves in Israel as being the only democracy in the Middle East. And therefore my reply was that, look, we can speak of whatever we want in this country. We should also be able to hear whatever we want. And you know Israel, when somebody has an opinion, there are four others with different points of view. And this was a very strong opinion of this young gentleman who stood up and commanded us not to play it. Of course, the people who were of our opinion started to reply. And therefore, this riot ensued.
But you eventually played it?
I played it. Of course, the news cameras that were there, knowing that I was going to do this, only reported the riot. But the riot lasted about 5 minutes. Because the prelude of Tristan starts very quietly and is quiet for a couple of minutes at least. Once the music started to grow, the riot died down, and we ended really in a great victory that night, in a musical triumph. This was not reported, unfortunately.
Well, we have to go to a break now, but before we do, let me show another great musical triumph of yours in the Israel Philharmonic, which probably was a high point. For the 40th anniversary celebrations of the State of Israel. At the end of that year of celebrations, you took the Israel Philharmonic to Masada, the rock that's near the Dead Sea, a symbol of Israeli resistance and a symbol of Israel for the last 2,000 years. And you played Mahler at the foot of the rock. Speaking of Wagner, of course, that's one of his disciples, I guess. And we're going to see a little clip from that historic concert in Masada with Zubin Mehta in the Israel Philharmonic, and we'll be back after that. Report. I'm Mike Burstyn, substituting for Leon with my special guest, Zubin Mehta. Zubin, you were in Russia last year with the New York Philharmonic.
Now it's already 2 years ago.
2 years.
Yeah.
Some of your impressions about the people since what's happened since Glasnost. How was the audience?
Well, even in the middle of 1988, there is a definite change in the way people talk. There was still no food on the shelves, and there are no apartments, but we know all that. But people talk very openly, and the love in 1988 was for the man on the street, for Gorbachev, was quite exceptional. Today, I believe now, because of the fact that they don't see any physical, visible change, he's, you know, being denigrated again. But there was a great love. And you know, when musicians talk to each other, whether you're from one country or the other, we speak really the same language. And the impression we got was one of great openness. And the hospitality was really wonderful.
Any plans of taking the Israel Philharmonic to Russia?
Yeah, we are negotiating right now. A delegation from Israel has already been to Russia. And, you know, they're not easy to negotiate with.
Maybe we'll meet there. I'm going in May.
Ah, no. Then you can carry messages for us. We are going most probably the end of November.
All right.
With Itzhak.
I'll prepare the territory.
Yeah, please.
Well, you know, take me along, and I'll do Peter and the Wolf. I'll even learn Russian.
In Yiddish.
We'll do Peter and the Wolf. You once told me, I was asking you once in Israel, who inspired your life. I know you once studied to become a doctor before you went into music. Do you ever regret not having become a doctor?
No.
But who was it?
Standards are very important. The standard I would have attained as a doctor would have been almost dangerous to people's lives.
You never know. I think you would have attained greatness in anything that you did. But so you once told me who inspired you. I asked you if there was one person, if I were to ask you who inspired your life, who would that person be? Remember what you said?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Right.
Without even thinking twice. Not this century or any. It was a man who just had a vision for his country, for his people, and he attained it without spilling blood. And why that has not been achieved in other places. There have been so many revolutions in the 20th century. So many people attaining freedom, throwing off a colonial yoke. But nobody did it like Gandhi.
Well, I think what we're seeing now, especially in East Germany, that was, I think, if Gandhi were alive today,
he would have probably been very proud
because there was no bloodshed in East
Germany. Yeah, and without, they did it without a Gandhi, without a sort of a prophet. People went out on the streets 200 years after it happened in France, where it was very bloody. And here in so many countries, they just demanded a change.
Although I was hearing a story the other day that before that revolution in East Germany took place, there were some dissidents gathered in a church in East Germany, and the preacher told them to go out and with nonviolence, if they have to be arrested, to let them be arrested. And he quoted from Martin Luther King, who of course was also a disciple of Gandhi's philosophy.
Yeah.
So it just shows that everything seems to come together into our century.
Yeah.
So I guess Gandhi could have been an inspiration for all of us.
And to think that of all the people, Mahatma Gandhi has never received the Nobel Peace Prize. Not even posthumously.
Not even posthumously.
No. Never happened.
Let me throw some one-word questions at you. Give me one-word answers if you can. Who's your favorite composer?
Oh, you can't say that. There's no one word for that. If I say Mozart, Bach's descendants would sue me.
Let's say, who is the easiest composer you've had to deal with in your career? Is there such a thing?
No.
No. The most difficult?
No. Oh. In the end, it's the whole classical period where we know so little, although we all profess to be experts. The classical period, let's say from Bach to Mozart.
Probably the most difficult.
That's the one we love the most, and we have the most problems with.
Favorite food?
Indian.
I can attest to that.
My Zionism ends with my stomach.
I can attest. Zubin has taken me to Indian restaurants in Tel Aviv, in Amsterdam. We met a few months ago when I was doing Barnum there. We went to him. You still have that little pishkula with the, hot peppers? That's his favorite. That little pishkula that, that Freddie Mann gave you, that little gold pishkula. Favorite literature. Do you have much time to read?
Yes.
What would be your favorite kind of
history.
Book?
History.
History. Favorite language? Do you have a favorite language?
I would say Italian.
Really?
Yeah. Yiddish being the most descriptive, where you can say much more in a few words. Italian is the opposite. It's very floral, very poetic, and very musical sounding language. My own mother tongue is a very ugly language.
Hindu?
No, Gujarati.
I beg your pardon.
Gujarati.
Gujarati. Gujarati.
That's the language of Gujarat, the upper west coast of India.
Where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
How about soloists? This is going to be tough. I don't want you to
Tough.
Who is the easiest soloist you've had to work with?
I'll tell you what. I have a group of friends which is an extension of my Israeli Philharmonic family. With all those friends, it is just heaven on stage.
Yitzchak?
Well, no, I would start from Rubinstein. It was Rubinstein, and then the next generation. Daniel, and Yitzchak, and Pinky. With these people, I'm just... Now there are new friends, you know, there are new friends. I can't just name everybody.
We're going to get comments for having left somebody out.
Yeah. There's Murray Pariah and Radu Lupu and Yo-Yo Ma, Lynn Harrell. And there's so many wonderful, wonderful people. And then the next generation after them is already coming up. But they are from the Orient. Who's mostly all of them.
Your favorite interviewer?
Huh?
Your favorite interviewer?
Mike, what shall I say?
Let's skip that one. Let me go to...
I'll tell you one thing. You said at the beginning of this interview that we have a half an hour. I said, Vez Mir. You know, what am I going to say?
How are we going to fill it up? Yes.
And now it's already time to finish.
It's almost over. You know, we first met under strange circumstances. We were having a massage, our mutual masseur in Israel, Charlie, at the Hilton Hotel. And since then, we have literally bumped into each other all over the world. We've met in Amsterdam, in Israel, of course, here, in Frankfurt. I'll never forget the day the Israel Philharmonic was coming to Frankfurt. I was doing a concert for a Jewish festival at the Alta Opera. They were opening that festival, and the maestro who was going to conduct took ill. Was it Commissiona or something?
No, Sinopoli.
Sinopoli. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, the orchestra arrived by special El Al plane. They had to perform that evening. You were in Florence rehearsing an opera for the festival, the mm-hmm. summer festival. Remember what happened? I couldn't believe it.
They sent me a plane. I came across.
They called
you? We did only a little piece called The Eighth Bruckner.
Which you're recording, I believe, right?
We recorded, yeah.
The Eighth Bruckner. Right. And we went to an Italian restaurant that night with a whole orchestra. And the next morning you flew back with that plane and did the second act rehearsal for the opera.
After that, I needed my age-old Israeli masseur, Ziga Weisfish.
Oh, Ziga, yes.
Remember?
Do you ever sleep?
Huh?
Do you ever get in? Yes.
On the massage table.
that's when you get to sleep. We have to wrap this up. Unfortunately, our time is coming to an end, and I wish I could go on and on, but you'll come back, I hope, because we're starting Israel Culture Line, which is going to be a regular feature on this show for the second half, so please stay tuned to that. But just very briefly, your contract with the New York Philharmonic is going to be up in 1991, mm-hmm. I believe. What do you want to achieve in the next few years that you haven't achieved yet, if there is such a thing?
In New York?
In your life.
In my life.
If you have a goal that you have that you want to do, what do you want to do?
That will finish with the tomb, you know. The last breath I take in my life, I will still have a frustration that there are still so many works I never conducted. It's just unending. The richness of our world. The more music I learn, the more music there is to learn. The more music is already being written that we can't keep up with. It's just never ending.
Let me hope, and I know your legend will be never ending, but let me wish you bis hundert und zwanzig, as we say, till 120 years may you go on making people as happy as you have, and me for having come in here today. Thank you very much, Zubin. Have a good trip.
You're welcome.
See you
You're
somewhere welcome. At some time. This is Mike Burstyn. Thank you for being with us this part of the Leon Chani Report. We'll see you after this break.